Well, last time I introduced some fairly, I don't want to call them technical, but some things which, some objects which are needed to keep track of the kind of coordinates that will be used to describe convergence of integrals. And they consisted of a vector space A0, real vector space, which for any standard parabolic subgroup projects onto a smaller space, and which in turn projects onto the smallest of all spaces, the one where P is equal to G and is associated with the center of the group G. And so maybe I should just, I don't want you to think of these things as too much of a hurdle. They're really, really trivial. But the reason for introducing this, there was a twofold reason for introducing this. One is its dual space is exactly the thing that you would be led to, and I've said this before, but the dual space of A0 is exactly the thing that you would be led to if you wanted, for a general group, to describe the twisting by complex numbers of characters that occurs for representations of the group of edels. That's a standard operation where you take a character of the group of edels and you twist it by multiplying it by the absolute value of a given element raised to a complex power. So it's this that takes the place of the additive group of reals in that construction. This, of course, would be the analog of that for the group M0, the minimal Levy component, and this would be the analog of that for the group G. Always in these questions for harmonic analysis, and particularly for the trace formula, it's very helpful to try to think of the duality, the parallelism between representations, kind of like spectral objects, and conjugacy classes, geometric objects. It's always good to try to think of that, and in this case, so just sort of half the things that come up seem to have sort of dual properties as they relate to these two different kinds of objects. So I just gave you the spectral sort of reason for introducing A0. The geometric reason is that it represents coordinates relative to the map H0, from GA to A0, so it's some of the coordinates on GA, and they are the coordinates that govern by means of the approximate fundamental domain, which I haven't described, we'll have occasion to do so later, but the approximate fundamental domain for GA mod GQ, which was introduced in general by Borel and Harish-Chandra. In any case, these coordinates, which represent a set of non-compact coordinates, of course not all the coordinates on the non-compact group GA, but a set of coordinates, it's these coordinates that entirely govern the lack of compactness of the quotient of GA mod GQ. That really is kind of dual to the first use of this space. After all, I claimed, and will soon say in more detail, that the dual of A0, or rather its imaginary part, governs the continuous spectrum. And so it really, through this tensoring operation, this twisting operation, the continuous spectrum is kind of like the spectral analog of non-compactness of the quotient. Okay, so there's just a couple more things I should say. This shouldn't be a scary thing at all. For example, you can identify, if you like, it's not so canonical, but you can identify A0 or any of these other spaces. So let's do it for A0. You can identify this with the Lie algebra of A0R. So remember, this is the largest split central torus in G. That's what A0 is, and you can take its real points and take its connected component. And the process of identifying this with the Lie algebra of this is tantamount to the process by which you can identify GA with the direct product of GA1 with, I'll do it for M0 then, which is what I've stated up here. You can identify M0A with the direct product of A0, M01, 0A1, with A0, R0. Secondly, again, it's not so canonical, but if it makes things more concrete, you can also identify A0 with its dual space. So we have these two spaces underlying the things I introduced last week, the vector space and its dual space, and corresponding objects for each of the parabolic subgroups. If you want, you can identify the two of them by means of a positive definite, by fixing a positive definite bilinear form on A0. Well, there's lots of such things, so that would in itself be rather non-canonical, but you can make it much more rigid by insisting, in fact you would have to, insisting that it is invariant under, I don't know what Fiona called it, but it's often called the Coxeter group or the Weyl group, W0 of the underlying root system. So remember, that's where you take the dual space, A0 star, and really if you want, you have to remove the central part. That's what that means. You subtract away the part that is attached to the center. And so remember, we have the root system for that vector space attached to these, of which phi0 is the set of positive roots. And for example, if you were dealing with a simple group, this bilinear form then insisting that it be invariant under the Weyl group it means that it's uniquely determined up to a scalar multiple. So it's fairly canonical. And then the dual root, if you do that, the co-roots, alpha check in A0, then is identified with, well, not with the root. The co-roots, we always want to be careful that we don't confuse the co-roots with the roots, but the co-roots not identified with the root in the dual space, but rather with a multiple of the root, namely alpha times the inner product of alpha with itself. So a bilinear form. 2 alpha divided by the inner product of alpha with itself. This is then an element in A0 star. Really, A0 G star. The co-root being an element in A0 G, and then this being. And you can see that you can see both the advantage and disadvantage of doing this. It would be convenient just to have things in one vector space. For example, then, I went to a little bit of trouble to say that, in fact, you could embed not only as a projection from here to here, but in fact, you could get a splitting of it. You could write this as AP times a space that we called AP, A0 upper P. So, and in fact, you can identify, there's a split, you can write AP as a direct sum of this space with the kernel, AP upper G. So the advantage of doing it is you right away that the splittings would be given by the orthogonal complements relative to this bilinear form that you fix. The disadvantage is you can see that the co-root identified with a linear functional on A0 isn't going to be uniquely determined. It'll depend on the choice of this bilinear form. And the coroot is really a canonical object only as an element in the space A0, not in its dual, because you can see that you've got the bilinear form in the bottom here. And even if it's a simple group and it depends on a complex scalar multiple of itself, a positive scalar multiple of itself, it's going to change how you identify it. But nevertheless, it's pretty straightforward. So I mentioned then at the end of last time that you really have four bases. You've got a basis of A0 upper G star, namely the simple roots, and you have another basis, the simple weights, and you have corresponding dual bases of the underlying vector space, the simple coroots and the simple coweights. And you can do the same thing for the space attached to any P. So for any standard parabolic subgroup, let me write, so I've already got a basis delta P of the space AP star, or rather AP upper G star, but there's a second basis that we can do here, delta P hat, and let me write this for we think of A0, we've got the roots, and we have the weights. Now, the weights are a dual basis of the coroots. So, remember, delta P, the parabolic subgroup P is determined by a subset of the roots delta 0. And to get the roots delta P, you'd have to project the complement of that set of roots, delta 0p, onto the kernel of that complement, namely the space AP. Delta p hat, however, you don't have to project because you're talking, the weights are actually already a dual basis of the, multiples of the simple roots. So in fact, delta p hat you would take to be the set of simple weights. You wouldn't need to project them at all because they're already in the appropriate space in which alpha lies in the complement of delta 0 minus the space delta upper P that determines the parabolic subgroup P. And so this is a second basis. Of A P G star, and then you can take the corresponding pair of dual bases of the vector space A P G. So we could let delta P check be simply, I'm just going to simply index it by the elements alpha in delta P, and I will define these elements to simply be the basis of APG that is dual to delta, to delta P hat. It's dual to the fundamental weight analog of the simple weights, and we could take delta hat P check to be a set of elements which we could write as pi alpha check alpha in delta P, and let this be the basis of APG that is dual to delta P, the original basis. So we have four bases, not just for the largest of these vector spaces, but for any of these real vector spaces attached to a parabolic subgroup. And in this case, this is not really standard notation. It's not standard terminology. The reason is that because alpha in delta P, that's the thing that indexes these two bases and indexes this basis as well. Because this is not So it's not part of a root system in the precise sense defined in Bourbaki or described by Fiona last week. It's not part of a root system. Alpha check here, this alpha check, that's not a co-root in any sense. Rather, it's the following. If alpha is the restriction to AP of the simple root beta in delta 0 minus delta 0 upper P, then alpha check is the projection onto AP of the corresponding co-root beta check. Well, I'm going to need these things, to be honest, I really don't need them to be quite as precise as this. I'm really only going to need these things up to scalar multiples of themselves, but we definitely need them to define chambers, cones, in the vector spaces AP. And it's these things and how they relate to each other, and even how they relate among themselves as P varies, that is going to govern the geometry of the coordinates, say in A0, that is responsible for the lack of compactness of the quotient. And so there's a very nice, we'll get to it, there's a very nice interplay between the geometry of cones defined by these bases. So I can say conclusion, we've got the, so just as a conclusion, we've got four bases for any P. We have two bases. Delta P and delta P hat of the space AP G star. And two bases. And corresponding dual bases. Delta P hat, check, and delta P check of APG. And it is the interplay of cones defined in these vector spaces by these bases with analysis, actually, with just analysis, trying to estimate integrals that will be responsible for the success, the convergence of what the truncated integral that we're going to define. Well, since I've kind of just thrown all this notation for a little while, before I leave it, I better just, we won't have to do any more of it, but I'll just note that, in fact, more generally, you can do this, you can attach bases, further bases, for any pair of embedded standard parabolic subgroups. One can define, one can use these bases. One can use these bases, in fact, in the obvious way, to construct two bases, delta P1, P2. I'll call it delta P1, P2, and I'll call the other one delta P1, P2 hat. So remember we were going to call AP1, P2 the complement of the dual of the complement of AP1 of AP2 in AP1, and corresponding dual bases. Delta P1 P2 hat check and delta P1 P2 check of AP1 P2. So, I mean, for example, delta P1 P2 would be is the set, so it's a bunch of linear, set of linear forms, linear functionals on that space, and it's the set of restrictions. To A P1 P2 as a subspace of A P1 of elements in, well, we've got delta P1, that's the basis of the dual of this, and this is the complement, this is the kernel of the map of AP1 into AP2, which is defined by, delta 0 P1, and it's the you have a smaller space, delta, delta P1 minus delta P1 P2, while delta P1 P2 hat is the set of restrictions. To A P1 P2 of elements in delta P1 hat minus delta P2 hat. Yes, thanks. You would need this last thing because a lot of the arguments are going to be by induction. And if P1 is contained in P2, then P1 intersection, so MP2 is a bigger Levy subgroup than MP1 if P1 is smaller than P2. But it doesn't contain all of P1, but you can intersect P1 with MP2. MP2 is a reductive group, and so that this is, well, it's a parabolic subgroup. In fact, the standard parabolic subgroup in the reductive group MP2. Well, whenever you talk about a standard group, of course, you need to have a fixed minimal parabolic subgroup, and of course, it's relative to the fixed minimal parabolic subgroup P0 intersection MP2. And so all of the things that we've done for G, we can do for MP2. And so we could form the space AP1 intersection MP2. That's kind of like, so that's a vector space defined for the group MP2, but relative to the parabolic subgroup given by that intersection. And it's just, of course, the space attached to P1. But the complement, which you'd have by taking a P1 intersection MP2 and taking the complement of the split component of the center of MP2, so we have such a thing, we had such a thing for G, that's equal to a P1 P2. While the set of roots of the parabolic subgroup P1 intersection MP2, well, that's going to be, it's a question of just sorting through the definitions, and if you do that, you see that the roots attached, simple roots by the procedure we did last time, attached to this parabolic subgroup of MP2, that's just the set defined up there, delta P1, P2. And the corresponding weights, delta P1, P2 hat, delta P1 hat intersection MP2, the second basis of this space, regarded as something you construct for the underlying basic group MP1, that is delta P, that is delta P1, P2 hat. Well, I hope this is I hope this isn't too much to swallow at one go. It really, if one actually works with these things, it's important to be comfortable with them. And I think one of the things we're hoping to try to do is both to motivate people in the summer school, but also maybe give just some familiarity with the techniques, so that if you ever do, if the occasion comes when you want to work in topics that are done in the summer school, even if they're not part of what you're doing now, that you would have the means, the entry into it would be a little easier than it would otherwise be. So one has to be really quite familiar with these things to deal with questions in harmonic analysis and especially with the trace formula. But they're not, they're really not bad. Let's just look. I'm going to give two examples which can guide just about everything we think about on these things. I'm going to give an algebraic example. That's the case of GLN. And then I'm going to give a geometric example, a much smaller group, SL3. And to visualize the geometry of these things, it's really pretty simple. It's usually enough just to think of the case of SL3. Let's just do algebraically how these things look for the case G equals GLN. And then we'll just look much less, much simpler. We'll look at geometrically how they look. And if you're not already familiar with it, you'll see how they look in the case of SL3. Okay, so this was based on the notion of a Lie algebra when we talked about roots. So the roots, since the root system attached to the given group G, the Lie algebra is germ script G. It's the Lie algebra of n by n matrices with the Lie bracket given by commutation of two matrices. And then we, in order to define the root system attached to G and A0, we had to look, it was a specialization of the adjoint representation, which maps G into the group of linear isomorphisms of the Lie algebra, regarded as a vector space. And so what does add G do to an element X in the Lie algebra? An element in G, Well, it just sends it to its conjugate, g. All right. So to define the root system, maybe Fiona did this. I don't know, but I want her to just say what it is. The group, the maximal split torus A0 in GLN. Remember, that's the group of diagonal matrices. Invertible diagonal matrices. And so this group acts by conjugation, namely the adjoint action, on the Lie algebra of the minimal, the unipotent radical of the minimal parabolic subgroup. So it's the Lie algebra. Well, let's write it as script N0 or NP0, the set, the subalgebra of this, consisting of upper triangular matrices, of nilpotent upper triangular matrices with zero on the diagonal. So this is the Lie algebra of NP0. So this conjugation of this obviously preserves the block of coordinates in the upper triangular matrix. And so we can write down what the roots are. C0 is the set of linear forms that you get. Well, you can regard them, we first would regard them as characters on this group. They were defined first as characters on this group. And it's the set of characters gotten by letting this element act on a simultaneous eigenspace in N0. So it's clear what the simultaneous eigenspaces are. They're simply given by the entries, the coordinates, the natural coordinates of that vector space. And so phi 0, what's it going to be? It is the, what does this matrix conjugate one of these things to? Clearly it conjugates it to a multiple by the character, a multiple of a given coordinate by the character on this group given by beta ij of A being simply aj to the minus 1. So I guess let's write it like this. It's a set of beta ij indexed by elements I less than j, where beta ij of A is ai aj to the minus 1. Now, we write this group of characters. Remember, we were writing the group of characters of A0 additively. So that involves, and we have to write it additively to define what the image of this thing is then as a linear form on the vector space script A0. And so as a linear form on the vector space, script A0. Okay, so that would be that could be identified with the group of diagonal real matrices in which you allow any real numbers. So it's the additive, the vector space of diagonal real matrices. And so we have to use additive notation for these characters, and you see right away that what beta then does to u is simply take the ith coordinate and subtract from it the jth coordinate. And what are the simple roots? If you haven't seen it before, you'll see perhaps right away what it is, even if you haven't seen it before. They're the unique subset of I ranges over indices less than j, for which any one of these positive roots can be written as a non-negative linear combination of this subset of simple roots. And so what is it? Delta 0 is the set, I'm going to write them as beta I, but in terms of these things, they're the roots beta I plus 1, in which I ranges between 1 and n minus 1. A general root beta ij then being written as the sum of the simple roots. So this is ui minus ui plus 1, and then I add beta I plus 1. That's ui plus 1 minus ui plus 2, and so on, up to beta j minus 1 for any I less than j. So that's the root system, first example of a root system that one does in a book on Lie algebras is this one, the root system of GLN, and the general roots are these linear combinations of the simple roots. And then we had looked earlier at the case of GLN, and we had noted that partitions N1, the standard parabolic subgroups, that's supposed to be a small p, partitions of N are bijective with standard parabolic subgroups P of G. But now, in the general situation, we were agreeing that parabolic subgroups, standard parabolic subgroups, were parametrized by subsets of the simple roots. And so, what subset of the simple roots gives the parabolic subgroup P attached to a partition? It's the set delta 0 P of roots beta I, these roots beta I plus 1, in which you take all roots except where you do not allow I to be equal to any of the sums of the integers, successive sums in the integers given by the partition that governs the block diagonal form of the parabolic subgroup. In other words, we're not going to allow I to equal N1, we're not going to allow it to equal N1 plus N2, and we're not going to allow it to equal N1 plus N2 up to NK for any K between 1 and this little p. I mean, to see that is this subset of the simple roots give the same, by the general prescription that we had, why does it give the same standard parabolic subgroup that the partition of N gives when you form the group of block upper triangular matrices? Well, the embedding so AP, that's isomorphic to R to the P, because we did that look before. And so we're saying that you can embed this in A0, which is isomorphic to R to the n. And this embedding is given by taking an element T equals T1 up to TP and embedding that into Rn by sending it to the element U obtained by taking N1 copies of T1, N2 copies of T2, and finally NP copies of TP. So this is N1, this is N2, and this is NP. And this subspace of A0, namely Rn, is supposed to be cut out. It's supposed to be the simultaneous kernel of all of the roots, all of the linear forms in this subset set delta 0 p. And indeed it is. As long as you take a general root takes a general simple root would take one coordinate in Rn and subtract from it the next coordinate. So if I take those simple roots for which I is not allowed to equal any of these things, that would mean I'd be taking, I'm allowing this simple root, this simple root, this simple root, this simple root, but not this one, and so on. Not the next one, and not this one. So the simultaneous kernels, the orthogonal complement of everything in that set delta 0 p is indeed this subspace of Rn. And delta p, so remember delta p was the restriction to ap of the remaining things, everything in the complement of delta 0 minus delta p. And so delta p then as linear forms on these things sitting in here, obtained by restricting simple roots in the complement of delta 0 p in delta p, are going to be, and maybe let's index them by alpha I, the linear forms that take a given t, and they're the remaining ones. They're this, this, and this. So they take t, and they take t1 minus t2, and they take t2 minus t3. So alpha I takes ti and subtracts from it ti plus 1. And this is 1 less than or equal to I less than p. And so, I mean, don't need to go on, but I mean, you can see how you can fill all of these things in for GLN. I mean, the coroutes, P0 check. So that's an element in A0. The coroutes, I haven't actually defined coroutes, Fiona did. The coroutes are the vectors in A0. Simple coroutes are the vectors in A0, given by beta. Well, let's say all coroutes, all positive coroutes, are the coroute of beta ij, namely beta ij check, is given by beta ij check. This is a vector in this space that's isomorphic to Rn. So I guess in terms of the standard basis of Rn, it's Ei minus Ej. In other words, it's the vector 0, 1, 0, 0, 1, minus 1. That's I. And okay. So and we get a basis So the coroutes then give us a basis delta zero check, the beta I check, namely EI minus EI plus 1, 1 less than or equal to I, less than N, of A0G. So what's A0G? It's the kernel of the map from A0 to AG. AG is a one-dimensional space. The projection of A0 onto AG, if you look back at the definition, it takes an element in Rn and it simply sums the coordinates. So this is the set isomorphic to the set of U in Rn, such that the sum of the coordinates is zero. And so indeed, these coroutes do lie in this subspace and a dual basis. So a dual basis pi I, say. So this would be delta zero check. Delta zero hat. I've written it down wrong. Delta zero hat. That's the dual basis of linear forms. The basis is dual to the coroutes, and so these are the linear forms pi I that send a given vector U in Rn to, well, you just have to concoct something that is the dual basis of these things, but not in Rn, something that annihilates the diagonal embedding of AG, and also annihilates the diagonal embedding of AG into A0. And so what you get is, in fact, n minus I over n times the sum of the first I coordinates of U minus I over n times the sum of the remaining coordinates of U. This is for, again, 1 less than or equal to I, less than n. So you can calculate any of these things for GLN, and an exercise that's a standard property of root systems. So let's just say one other thing. What's the Weyl group? W0. What's the Weyl group of GLN? Well, it's generated by the reflections, say, as a group that acts on A0. It's generated by, or it's dual. It can act on either A or A0 star or A0, or A0G and A0G star. And it's the group generated by reflections about the roots. So what group, and then, in fact, you can, part of the basic theory of semisimple Lie algebras, in fact, is it's enough to take reflections about the simple roots. And the group generated by those, in fact, gives the whole Weyl group. So what's the group of reflections? If you haven't seen it, again, you could say probably pretty quickly what it is. What's the group of reflections of Rn about the hyperplanes defined by these roots, either the simple roots or all roots, namely the roots that take coordinate ti and subtract from it the next coordinate, ti plus 1. Well, that's a permutation. It's a transposition. And so the group generated by the permutations of size 2 is, of course, the full symmetric group. So this is Sn acting on A0, or A0 upper G acts on both the vector space and its dual space. By so let's just say acting on this, which of course is isomorphic. So Rn, sorry, acting on Rn in the usual way, which is isomorphic to A0. And then if you want to, this operation of identifying A0 with its dual space in a way that's invariant under the symmetric group, so then if you identify A0 with its dual space, by simply, in fact, taking the two identifications with Rn, or that amounts to identifying Rn with its dual space by the dot product, well, that is, indeed is invariant under the action. So let's say identifying this by the dot product gives W invariant bilinear form. On A0. Okay, so we're almost finished these roots and weights with these examples, and then we'll be well equipped. We'll be equipped to deal with various things that are going to come up. But just on this question of identifying A0 with Rn, identifying A0 with its dual space by the dot product, as I say, this is a standard operation for general semi-simple Lie algebras. And one of the things that one proves in one of the basic things that one proves early in the in Serre's book, for example, right near the beginning, that if you do this operation, then observe that if I observe in this example that if I is not equal to j, the two simple roots, corresponding two simple roots, their inner product, beta I and beta j, is less than or equal to zero. This, of course, is the dot product. Well, I guess that's clear. I mean, you've got, you're identifying the vector 1 minus 1. You're taking the dot product of a vector 1 minus 1, where the minus 1 comes right after the 1, with another such vector. So either the inner product, dot product of the two of them is going to be 0, or they will have a minus 1 multiplied by a plus 1. Either way, you get something that's less than or equal to 0. And so one can prove as an exercise that, in fact, it works for general dual bases, but maybe it's simple enough to do it for these bases, dual bases. Show that the opposite property is true for the basis of weights. So here are these pi i's here. That the dot product of one pi I with another is in fact greater than or equal to zero for every I and j. So two simple roots geometrically form an obtuse angle, or an angle that's greater than or equal to 90 degrees, whereas two simple weights geometrically form an acute angle, one that's less than or equal to 90 degrees. So I've just got a couple minutes left, so I'll just do the example where we can just see these things geometrically and as I say, I think that this much of what happens in the convergence of integrals, you can see a toy model of it happening in this geometric example where G is SL3. I'm taking SL3 just because it's the same as GL3, except that I don't have a center, so I don't have to worry about the group of diagonal scalar matrices. And let me take P equal P0, standard group of upper triangular matrices. So but otherwise, the theory is the same as for GL3. The Weyl group is the symmetric group on three letters. The roots are given by the same formulas. And so we identify A0. So now that this is going to be two-dimensional, it's not going to be three-dimensional. It would amount to the group of diagonal, the vector space of diagonal real matrices, whose sum, whose coordinates sum to zero. And so we'll identify this with its dual space. We want to draw a picture, I might as well identify the two of them. So we'll identify it with its dual space, A0 star, by the restriction of the dot product on R3. So then we've got a two-dimensional space, which we can draw a picture of. So what are the fundamental, what are the simple roots going to look like? So, the roots are going to be 1 minus 1. We've identified it with its dual space. So roots are 1, the simple roots, the first simple root is 1 minus 1. The second simple root is 1 minus 1. So the dot product of those two simple roots is minus 1. And those are both vectors of norm, I guess, root 2. So you've got dot product minus 1 of two vectors, root 2. So they're going to intersect at an angle of 120 degrees. So there's going to be, first of all, we've got delta 0, two simple roots, beta 1 and beta 2. Phi 0 is three positive roots, beta 1, beta 2, and beta 1 plus beta 2. And beta 1 and beta 2, the two simple roots, intersect, that they form an angle of 120 degrees. So there's beta 1, and there's beta 2. And then here is beta 1 plus beta 2. And each of these roots is orthogonal to a plane, to a line. And remember that parabolic, so that's the minimum, that two-dimensional plane is the minimal parabolic, corresponds to the vector space for the minimal parabolic subgroup. And so the maximal parabolic, well, first of all, what's the dual basis? It's the same diagram. We want the dual basis of beta 1 and beta 2. We want something whose dot product with beta 2 is 0 and is 1 with beta 1. So we'd have to have a vector on this space line and the vector here. So we'll have the dual basis has a pi 1 there and a pi 2 there. And then to represent maximal parabolic subgroups, they're not equal to G, the parabolic subgroups of rank 1, so maximal parabolic subgroups of SL3, of course maximal not equal to G, rather than G itself, Well, there's going to be two of them because there's two non-trivial subsets of this set of two elements, so PI, and they're going to correspond to subsets delta PI consisting of just one root, beta I equal 1 and 2. So remember, parabolic subgroups given by, parameterized by subsets of the simple roots in this way are given by so the parabolic subgroup defined by the subset consisting of beta 1, its AP1 is the orthogonal complement of that. So there's AP1 for the parabolic subgroup P1 defined by the subset beta 1. And then here's beta 2. This is its complement. So there is AP2. This one-dimensional space, that's AP2. And this one-dimensional space is AP1. And so we will use this diagram to visualize chambers defined by simple roots and simple weights. And so this is all we'll need to do on these things, these rather technical things. Next time, we will introduce the truncation of the kernel, and I will try to describe the program for obtaining a trace formula from the truncation process.